fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. He's talking about what you're talking about, only in a much more eloquent manner. You're listening to Primetime Sports with Bob McGowan on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is by request, by the way, Brian.
Whose request?
Some guy on Twitter.
Oh, really?
Requested it.
So is that what we're doing now? We're taking requests? Are you sending it out to anybody?
Here's what Yeah. Blast from the past, a gold nugget, because you dug it solid gold to make you feel old. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
All request Wednesday. Tomorrow will be all request Wednesday. All our bumpers will be by request.
Have you told Neil?
No.
It's important to tell Neil what's coming in advance.
Neil won't do it anyway. It doesn't make any difference.
Well, Neil does what Neil does.
But he did that. I asked him. I said, got a request for Let's Dance by David Bowie.
He did that.
Pulled it off. Only gave him like 60 seconds to do it, too. So I think he could do this.
Well, I mean, he doesn't look that excited about it.
So here's what you do. Tweet us. That's the best way to do it, isn't it? Or do you want to email? Do you want to email or both? Email? Okay, what's the email? You email us your request at primetime@sportsnet.ca. Oh, sportsnet590.ca. primetime@sportsnet590.ca. It's going to take them 25 minutes just to type that URL in. primetime@sportsnet590.ca. So you give us your request for bumper music and we'll play all, and it'll be all request Wednesday tomorrow.
Hmm.
Be fantastic.
Anyway, we'll see where that goes. Maybe.
Give me the over-under on how many requests we get.
Well, I think that's, people in their car are still trying to write down that email address. That might get in the way slightly.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I think there may be an issue with that.
See, that's why Twitter would be easier.
Well, then they can twit you.
Okay, because you don't have it. You're not a twit.
You're correct.
Well, you are a twit, but you don't tweet.
Bada bing.
You can tweet me at Fadoo Bobcat. At Fadoo Bobcat. FadooBobcat. MOUSE. Either one. All right.
I'm going out to your Emmy Lou Harris tonight, speaking of music, with Dan Lanwa. The great Emmy Lou Harris. Can't wait. The Wrecking Ball Tour. You know that record? You don't know that record. Why am I asking you that?
People, they're talking to me while I'm trying to listen to you, but I'm not really listening.
I know you're not listening to me. You're listening to them.
Well, you're given, you're doing your daily, this is what I'm doing tonight.
Like, that's not daily. On occasion, I mention it because I think people like to hear about the world outside this studio.
Like, you don't talk about when you're going out to get, pie-faced.
I'll do that next time. Pie-face day.
When you and Ryan are going out to just drink yourselves into oblivion.
We go out and have one beer.
Sure you do.
Yeah, I got to go home. I can't get pie-faced.
Yeah. Well, you can get on the GO train.
On the GO train and just nod off.
You can be
off.
Drunk as a skunk on the GO train.
That's true. That's true. They don't care on the GO train.
There's nobody standing there giving you a breathalyzer when you get on the GO train.
That's absolutely true.
In fact, they want you drunk on the GO train.
Is that they prefer that?
Sure.
Okay.
Because the further you go, then the more you have to pay. They hope you go past your stop.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Well, he fell asleep. He passed out on the GO train.
St. Catharines, yeah.
Next thing you know, he was in Guam. Woke up and he said, how much? Guy said, $4,000. Should have got off at your stop. Yeah, they like that. What's happening here? There's not too much happening. Greg Zahn's going to join us in the studio in a little while. Excellent. Blue Jays are back at it tonight.
They are.
Now, wait. Minnesota doesn't have a dome anymore, do they?
No, they don't.
That's a bad idea.
It could be a bit chilly there.
Chilly? Freezing. It's going to be like 32 degrees at game time.
Ooh. Good night for the pitchers.
Ouch. Well, it is a good night for the pitchers.
Yeah, because you don't want to hit the ball the wrong way and
ow,
it hurts, yeah. Rasmus sitting out tonight.
Plus two in Minneapolis right now?
Not on the DL, but not playing tonight.
Sorry?
Colby Rasmus not playing tonight.
Oh, he's not?
No. They're going to be, I haven't heard anything.
But not on the DL.
But not on the DL. So they could, you know, they could put him on the DL retroactive to.
Well, he had that little hammy thing, and it, when it's cold, you know.
I'd rather they were careful. So I think Jose's playing. I think Bautista's playing center field tonight. Kawasaki hitting second tonight.
Which, really?
You know, which is.
Figure that one out.
Well, we'll see.
Sierra going to play right?
Sierra's playing in right field, I believe. That's correct.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens. But
who's the second base going?
I don't know, boys. Do we know who's playing second base? Maybe we'll find
Do we out. Have the lineup? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
But Reyes back by the end of the week. Everybody's still thinking he'd be back for Friday, so then they can
in Cleveland.
Shuffle the infield a little bit, where it will also be, well, it won't be quite as chilly, because I think it's supposed to warm up as the week goes on.
Yeah.
It is the middle of April, after all. But, yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. They have hit well in Minnesota in the new park, especially guys. Encarnacion has been, that's a place he's just torn up. So
yeah, but tonight
he was starting to show, he was starting to kind of break out of his funk a little bit. So we'll see what happens.
So the idiot producer just says, yeah, Kawasaki's batting second. We knew that. We didn't ask that. We said, oh, he's playing second. Well, who's playing short then? That's what I asked. So Goins is batting ninth and playing shortstop. The shortstop. What's Goins' number? Is he number one? No, he doesn't wear number one. 17, that's right. Who wore number 17 for the Blue Jays previously?
Oh, it's not. Who wore number 17 for the Blue Jays?
I don't know.
I can't think of it. Off the top of my head.
What was Kelly Gruber's number? Isn't that funny with baseball? The numbers don't mean nearly as much as they do in other sports. You identify players, like hockey players, you'd know their number.
Yeah, you're right. Although,
Kelly Gruber wore 17? Yes, he did. Look at that. Omar Vizquel wore number 17, too.
Yes, not quite as gloriously.
Well, he was hardly ever out there. You never saw the back of his uniform, hardly.
No, he was back politicking in the dugout, apparently.
Yeah.
Fomenting rebellion.
How'd that work out?
Well, there was lots of rebellion, so he actually worked out pretty well. Everybody was disgruntled that year, as you may recall.
What's your over-under on tweets and emails? You got to give me a number.
I have no idea. What are you 50? Up to? What are you up to now?
No, give me a number.
50.
Okay. How many you got? How many emails you got so far?
Doesn't look like. It doesn't seem
You're not
like,
even paying attention, are you?
I don't think a lot's happening in there.
Oh, his email doesn't work. Well, why do we give out that email address if it doesn't work? We got till tomorrow. Well, yeah. Really? Are you from the Southwest? Are you from Mexico? Hey, man, we got till tomorrow.
Anyway, you have
no reason to panic. Here are the guys who've worn number 17. Oh, it's a long list, isn't it? First guy to wear 17, Tim Johnson. Followed by Domingo Ramos, Mark Bomback, Randy Moffitt.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly Guoba.
Randy Moffitt is Billie Jean King's brother, right? I think that's correct.
Yes. Robert Perez, Dave Hollins. Remember Dave Hollins? He says, it's always interesting going back. A lot of guys, you forget they were Blue Jays, even for a cup of coffee. Curtis Goodwin. I don't remember him. Chris Mihalik. Josh Phelps.
Mm-hmm.
For 3 years. Josh Phelps was a Blue Jay for 3 years. Huh. Eric Crozier, no relation. Lyle Overbay, oh, could have remembered him. David DeLucci, Josh Renicki, Omar Vizquel, and Ryan Goins. There you go. There's all the 17s in history, including Kelly Guba. What else do you have on your mind today? What do you mean, else? I mean, like,
well,
like
the hockey playoffs
something.
Are about to start. You know, it's kind of exciting time of year.
Is it? You care?
Don't you think? There's some really good. There's some good teams playing other good teams, right? It's going to be some fun stuff. There's going to be some good teams lose.
Yeah, which means the system is bad.
Well, the system is going to give you a really interesting first round, I guess. But you know, there's a bunch of series that are very tough to call.
Who's LA got? LA's got St. Louis. Is that right?
No.
LA got? LA's got somebody like.
LA's got San Jose, don't they?
San Jose, that's right. LA's got San Jose.
St. Louis, Chicago.
Yike.
You know, Detroit,
that's a tough one.
Detroit Boston's a really interesting series.
No, it's not. Boston, kill them.
I don't not know because they, you know, Detroit has not been healthy all year.
They got
healthy at the end. They played pretty well at the end to get into the playoffs, and they're not going to be. I don't think they're an easy out. I know Boston, you know, obviously had that unbelievable run, but I think that's an interesting series.
Plus, I'm sorry to the folks in Detroit that are listening.
First time they have played in the playoffs since I think 1957.
Who?
Boston and Detroit.
Oh, so played each other.
Yeah.
Couldn't figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of weird.
It's a long time. Well, you know, Detroit was in the West for a long time, but you know, there were several, a bunch of original six seasons in there when they didn't meet. Boston was pretty lousy for many of those, and then Detroit got lousy.
That would be the answer.
I think that's the answer. But yeah, the first time. Two of the great uniforms in sport.
Like, you have to be crappy if you're in a 6-team league and you didn't play each other in the playoffs for 10 straight years. Which is essentially what happened.
Yes. Yes, you would.
One or both of you had to be pretty crappy.
Well, as I recall, Boston was pretty crappy consistently until Bobby Orr showed up. So they had a long run of crappy.
Well, I do remember him. And it was after, you know, Del Vecchio and Howe and Lindsay and those gang. They were done.
Well, they were still there in the 60s.
Well, they were there, but...
Oh, yeah, no, and they were still...
They were good in
still
the
50s. Still a decent team in the early 60s. But no, the 50s were the peak for that team. Absolutely. But they were still kind of okay. They were still good, reasonably good in the early 60s. But then the decline began, the long, long decline of the Detroit franchise. As a Red Wings fan, I remember.
Eugene Melnick's going to join us later on.
How's he feeling these days?
I don't know. About what?
Well, he's usually got something that's bugging him. You know, conspiracies, intentional, his players being injured intentionally.
Well, you never know until he comes on.
Is he coming from the Caribbean, or is he coming from Ottawa?
Where is he tonight? Is he at the bar? He's in Ottawa?
That's unfortunate. Because his best interviews, I believe, have been somewhere else.
Well, he's at, what's it called? Bart's? Yeah. When he's at Bart's Bar.
So I ran into Bill Daly in the hall here today when I was coming in. He was leaving the building.
NHL Bill Daly?
Yeah. And I said, why don't you hang around and do Bob's show? And he looked at me and said, yeah, I'd love that.
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, I think you know what it means.
He doesn't like me?
He pretends to be your pal, but he's not really your pal. Keep that in mind.
What a dink. Why would he say that?
He scoffed at the notion of hanging around to do this show.
It's like going to the dentist, I guess.
Apparently.
We're too tough on him. That's the problem.
Well, not anymore. Now we're all buddies now, aren't we?
Apparently.
You had Gary in here, for God's sake.
I know. See, that's probably why Daly's pissed. Because Gary and I are talking again, and now he's not in the catbird seat.
Never thought I'd see that.
See, he's not the big banana on primetime anymore.
Yeah, he used to be the human face of the NHL.
Right. Now it's Gary again.
Sort of.
So Bill has been demoted.
Did you talk through the count thing with Gary?
Second string.
Did you kind of get that past the whole count thing?
No, we never talked about it. We didn't talk about anything. We just said hi.
Uh-huh.
Water under the bridge.
It's a lot of water.
No, he'll get mad at me again.
I hope so. I hope for the sake of the show he gets mad at you again.
Yeah, he will. I'll say something. He's very thin-skinned, Gary Bettman. He doesn't have a big sense of humor.
No, I've not known him to have a big sense of humor.
Yeah, so, and you know, if you're going to hang around me, you better have a sense of humor.
What can I say? I've been hanging around here a long time, Bob. My sense of humor is very well developed.
No, I mean, I got nothing. I like Gary. I mean, I disagree with a lot of things. But I disagree with a lot of things, everybody. I disagree with you, almost everything you say. Oh, speaking of disagree.
I can't believe this. I've never seen, you know, you in this building looking so...
Would you go to the health club today or what?
I had Fight Club, boxing.
Well, with Fight Club and boxing are two entirely different things. Fight Club is like, you know, bring knives and guns and...
No, it starts off...
You can kick and do anything you want.
Okay, it's boxing club then. There's no kicking.
So just boxing? You put gloves on?
Yes. Taped my hands and everything.
Like real gloves?
Absolutely.
Like not those UFC kind of,
16
you know.
Ounces.
Oh, those are like pillows.
Yeah, they're training gloves.
Did you wear a helmet?
No.
Why not? Why don't you wear headgear? Headgear keeps you from getting cut. Idiot.
Yeah.
Don't you know that?
Yeah.
You don't get cut up. You're a pretty boy for TV now.
Did you see my nose last week?
I tried not to. Why?
It's hard to miss.
What'd you get it bent sideways?
My dog got me.
The dog bit you in the nose?
Yeah, we were wrestling and I turned my head and I caught the the working end of his fang, his canine.
It's a big dog.
It's a Rottweiler.
Yes.
Yeah. He's goofy. 1 year old. 1 year old, not 1 year. 1 year old, and he's still a little uncoordinated.
So he wasn't mean. He was just playing.
No, he was just playing.
Did you smack him after he bit you?
No.
Say, hey, look what you did.
He didn't bite me.
It was your fault.
It was my fault, yes.
Nose looks good now. Well, yeah. I mean, as good as it can look.
It heals, yeah. I only took a couple in the kisser today.
So, belated happy birthday.
Thank you.
It was yesterday, right?
Yes.
How many?
43.
How do you feel?
I feel fantastic. I do. I feel better than I did when I played. It's awesome.
Makes you want to get back out there again?
No.
No.
No. There's a couple other things I'd rather do. Goalie would be one of them. I wouldn't mind playing fullback in the CFL. That'd be kind of fun, too. But
they hardly have those anymore.
I know. That's the problem. I have no ability to do anything but stand in the way. I could probably block the big guys, but I'm not going to be able to run away from anybody.
You need your Canadian citizenship, too, because then you get a ratio position.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So you might as well want to work on that, too.
Two more years. I'm married to a Canadian now, so it's coming.
You're being naturalized as we speak.
I am. I'm a PR, though. I'm a permanent resident.
I don't know if that counts.
That should count.
Don't look at me.
Why? I don't know. I'm not sure what your status is anymore.
Fly me to Regina.
Are you still a resident alien, or what are you?
No, I'm a permanent landed immigrant.
Okay. I knew you were a man without a country there for a little while. But now you are...
Well, no, and I'm okay in the U.S. now, too.
Fantastic.
I can go anywhere I want now.
That's awesome.
I'm not stuck here.
You don't want to go anywhere, but that's the whole other... That's the whole other
I've
thing.
Been all over the place.
You went somewhere.
Went to the Bahamas a couple weeks ago.
Yes, you did.
I'd have gone to Florida, but the cheapskates here wouldn't pay for it because they have to save money to send the hockey people places they shouldn't be going.
And you're going to China, right?
I'm not going to China yet. I don't know when I'm going to China. I'm going to go eventually. You been to China?
No, that sounds like fun.
The president of the winery just went to China. Spent 10 days there. He says, unbelievable.
Pretty sure I'd like the food.
He said it'd blow you away from every perspective. He says it's so big and so much money. You think of China as this backward country, with a lot of poverty. You know, communist state. It's not like that. Huh. It's like the Wild West.
Well, if you got room on the private jet, I'm up for it.
All right. So you want a free ticket is what you want?
Yeah, of course. I'll go.
Such a cheap bastard.
I know I am. I'm on Sportsnet minimum wage right now. I got to work a few more years to catch up with you, Bobby. Yeah, got to work a couple more decades to catch up with
you,
I suppose.
Well, you know, we all have to pay our dues.
Maybe someday I'll have my own show.
You should have your own show.
Be fun.
Now, I saw your 101, your first 101 of the year.
Yeah.
The other day. Way to go. And I'm going, I'm sitting there going, that's right, Zonny. That's exactly what I've been trying to talk about with Rasmus and with Laurie. Their bat position is bad. And we were talking about it in terms of the golf swing and just changing the plane. Buck was on with us talking about it. And a lot of people were saying I was full of hooey. And there are you on Sunday essentially talking about the exact same thing.
You know what's funny is both of them had really good days at the plate.
Yeah, they did.
And I'm not going to say that they were in the greatest of positions, but they were in better positions.
They were better.
The ball that Laurie hit out was a belt-high changeup right down the middle.
Yeah,
so it's not
I
like,
could have hit that out.
Yeah, it's not. He ran into that one.
Yeah, but it was a decent stroke though. It wasn't like he was off balance. I'm going to muscle it out of the park.
If
you watch his swing, he loaded, and what he hasn't been doing is loaded. Look at.
No, I saw it, but see, the speed of the pitch gave him time to finish the load.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
I'm surprised anybody throws him anything but fastballs in.
Yeah, because he can't get it going.
Not on an average to above average big league heater. And Brett Laurie's entire body is fast twitch muscle fiber. There's no reason he should be getting beat by a fastball ever.
Now, of course, Rasmus turned on a 98 mile an hour fastball up, so that was pretty good.
He got him back. It doesn't matter whether you're throwing a baseball, whether you're punching somebody in the face, you're going to hit a baseball, serve a volleyball, anything. You got to load up. You got to draw the bow back and get yourself into a strong position. That front foot has to get down so you have something to work against that's firm on the front side. If you're late doing it, you have to rush. being tardy with your load or not getting properly loaded causes 100% of the baseball swing problems that exist. It's the one thing that causes every problem. You can take steps backwards from a catastrophe and say, what happened? Well, his front side flew wide open. Why did his front side flew open or fly open? Because his eyes told him that he was late, so he tried to rush the front side open, and guess what happens? The hands get away from the body, and that's in the exact opposite of what you want to occur happens. That's it. All starts here. You can't get loaded too soon. You can't be there too early. Reminiscent of Michael Young. You remember how early Michael Young used to get down? Michael Young used to get down almost before when the guy took the ball out of his glove, and that was a big Rudy Jaramillo thing. Get it down and get it down early. You're back and you're in that loaded position. Now it's just a matter of reading spin. You know, a lot of guys don't feel comfortable in that position being out there for so long. Feel stagnant.
Yep.
I was one of them. But I could always tell when I was tardy, things went wrong very quickly. But when I was right and things were getting, and I was getting loaded up and my front foot was down, man, hitting gets fun.
Is that the kind of thing, do you think, you know, since we both have seen sort of the same thing, you have to assume these guys watch tape. Do you think they're aware of Rasmus and Laurie, where they've been and are in the process of trying to correct that?
I think they're very aware of it. I also think that, especially with Brett, they've been trying to get him to calm down, you know, be a little bit more quiet at the plate. And I think, you know, one step at a time.
Maybe, yeah.
One step at a time. There's, you know, there's one drill that I've been doing since I was a kid to teach myself how to separate that could remedy the situation in a couple of days in the batting cage. It's just a matter of getting your body trained. You put two hands on a bat, you walk up to the tee, you know, you go left, right, left, and as you're walking up to the tee, your body does what it's supposed to do. It separates and it loads up, and then you hammer the baseball off the tee. It looks strange, but it's, you know, it's kind of like a Happy Gilmore baseball swing, but it works. It actually does get your hands moving backwards where they're supposed to be. And, you know, I can't – one of the greatest hitting coaches that I ever had was a guy named Craig Wallenbrock. He did a little scouting out on the West Coast, but the guy just really understood the swing. He'd have a group of guys sitting around, you know, eating barbecue and drinking beers on the weekends in the wintertime, breaking down film of the great hitters like Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and – you know, we watched Ken Griffey Jr.'s 50 home run season, one swing after another. And, you know, what I said on the 101, it's not a lie. It doesn't matter where they start. Almost all the good hitters, they launch from one position. It's right around the top of the armpit, bottom of the shoulder. The knob of the baseball bat is pointed at the catcher's feet. The hands are back. The foot is down. The body's square at impact. But they all launch from the same area. They all launch from the same area. Colby's too low, and Brett doesn't clear his body frame. This body frame, if inside here, you're shoving the bat through. If once you get him back, same as a golf swing.
It's exactly the same.
Different planes, but same.
Yeah.
Once you get him back, you can launch from a strong position. And, you know, that's why a lot of guys, you know, in generations past, they never really worried about being out front with their body. As long as they could keep their hands back, they could lock that front side up and make up for the fact that they were too early on the off-speed stuff. But when the hands go with you or they never load up, you got no power. You're in a position of weakness.
Well, and all those things relate to the golf swing, which I have, you know, am familiar with. And the only point of difference is, because you'll see guys that slide into the ball with their hips fairly square in golf, and you'll see guys that spin their hips.
Yep.
And the fundamental difference is in golf, it's not just distance, it's also direction. Direction becomes key. In baseball, direction is less of an issue.
Right.
Because you can hit it dead right, and that can be good. Or you can yank it dead left, and that can be good, too.
Yeah.
Where in golf, that puts you in the trees.
Yeah.
Either side. But they all get, and if you look at the really different golf swings that you'll see every week on the tour, you look at Jim Furyk, who was playing in the Masters this past weekend, you know, with that funny kind of flying elbow thing. Or, oh, there's a whole long list of guys. What do they have in common? The club is pointing down. The heel of the club is pointing down as they start their downswing. exact same position that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And at Impact, they all look the same. Just hips may be different, but the rest of it looks the same.
Blue Jays fans will remember Frank Catalanato. He's what you would classify as a glider, more of a Charlie Lau kind of disciple, transfer from center to back to front. It was a big weight transfer.
Yeah.
And as long as the foot led the hitter out, Frank, I was the glider early in my career because I copied George Brett. I wanted to be George Brett. So I as long as your foot leads you out and stays in front of your head, you can put it down anytime you want to. That front side becomes firm. Now everything, it reacts exactly like a hitter who's on his backside. The other guys, they stretch what we would call the proverbial rubber band. Imagine a rubber band attached to your front, the ball of your front foot and the knob of the barrel. And as you stretch that rubber band foot and the heel of that bottom hand, it creates tension in the front lat underneath that arm,
torque is created,
and then the hips, the elbow goes, then the hips catch, kind of like a gears in a car, and then wham, there goes your bat speed. The guys that glided, like Frank, they used the stopping of their momentum on that firm front side to generate kind of a whipping kind of phenomenon that actually propelled the bat through the zone. You know, Frank Thomas was a glider. He was a Walt Riniak guy who was a Charlie Lau disciple, and he went and he changed things just a little bit. But more than one way to skin a cat, but at key points during a swing, they all look the same.
All should look the same.
All look the same.
So a pretty decent week for the home side last week, I thought, in terms of just playing pretty decent baseball and the consistency. But I guess the other thing that's going on, Greg, and I don't know how much people have been paying attention. Well, baseball fans have, but what's going on in Tampa right now? It looks like they're the Jays of last year in terms of bad luck. Like, that pitching rotation has been devastated. You know, yeah. Matt Moore going for Tommy John. You know, they've got Eric Bedard pitching for him. I saw him in the spring. That's like having Chen Ming Wong pitching for you at this stage. You know, because, you know, he was a decent pitcher once upon a time. He's not anymore. Chris Archer got beat up last night. He's a kid. He's still erratic. You know, Tampa, at the beginning of the year, you looked at that rotation and said, now Helixson's coming back. But you looked at that rotation and said, okay, there's the best rotation in the American League. There's the best rotation maybe in baseball. That's their ace in the hole. And they always have the next guy coming, right? They always have had – well, if they're pitching Eric Bedard right now, they don't have the next guy coming right at this moment. And they suddenly look like a more vulnerable team. You know, I thought they were going to win the division, and maybe they still will. But it's, you know, they don't look like that, you know, that kind of machine that they've been in recent years in terms of their starters.
No, and injuries can be the X factor. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. These guys do not look like the same ball club. Pitching has been their hallmark. Without their pitching, they're in trouble because they are not a dynamic scoring team. They're a throwback. Pitching and defense and timely hitting. And when I say timely hitting, they create ways to score runs. They're very creative in their run scoring process. And I think that, you know, it kind of goes around. You know, one year it's the Blue Jays, the next year it's Tampa. But I tell you, the thing that's so concerning to me is the severity of the arm injuries at such a young age. These kids are not being overworked. They have not been overworked. In fact, they've been pampered.
I think that's the problem.
They've been pampered, but they get to the big leagues at such a tender age, and I think there's a couple of different there's a maturity, there's that overall mental maturity, and then there's a physical maturity. You know, we got arms that are still in their teens, and they're attached to kids that are in their, you know, 20s because from the very beginning they've been on a pitch limit. We used to go play catch over and over, just one fastball after another. You know, it was, and I'm worried that, you know, all this, all these exercises, all this tubing and cuff weights and all the stuff that they do to try to strengthen the shoulder capsule and create scapular stability, to me it's just unnecessary fatigue and wear and tear on the area. That I think if you want to learn how to throw and learn how to throw long, you go and you play catch for a long time. If you want to be a marathon runner, get a pair of Nikes and go out there and hit the pavement.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting
question. Is there something to be said for the evolution of the pitches that are being thrown? Today, everybody has a fastball. everybody has a slider.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys are either have or are working on a changeup. There aren't a whole lot of curveball pitchers out there.
No.
And it used to be, I mean, when you started in Little League, you know, fastball first, then you learn to throw a curve.
Yeah.
Is pitch selection creating arm problems?
I don't think.
And if so, is it sliders?
I don't know if it's that, because there's been sliders forever. In fact, most of the guys nowadays don't really, they don't throw a true slider. They throw a slurve. To me, the reason why they've changed the pitch selection is because of the strike zone. When they had the outside protector, the zone was higher. More high curveballs would get called for strikes. Now they have most of the pitches that they have, cutter, slider, two-seamer, they sweep laterally across the zone. They cover a lot of the zone. Top to bottom, left to right, right to left. And you know what? To be honest with you, they are not teaching kids how to utilize these pitches properly. First of all, they got kids throwing two-seam fastballs from a high three-quarter slot that have no business throwing a two-seamer. There's literally no chance it's going to move. So they take a guy who would normally throw 93 miles an hour with a four-seamer. Now he's throwing 91 to 92 with a two-seamer that starts to move laterally right out of his hand. The guys that are special, like Halliday and Kevin Brown and even Jake Westbrook, their ball got three-quarters of the way to the plate and then started
and then starts
something.
To move, yeah.
These two-seam guys, like in Hutchison, I said it about Hutchison, his ball starts to move right out of the hand, so he's almost announcing to the world what pitch
Here's
is coming.
What's coming.
So the borderline pitches that were getting swung out in the minor leagues, they're getting spat on here in the bigs. So the whole function of a two-seamer is it's supposed to be thrown after I've gone ahead and thrown a four-seamer down and away to get ahead, strike one. I throw the two-seamer in the same spot, and it gets almost to the plate and then darts off out to the end of the bat or out of the strike zone where they can't get it. A two-seam fastball is not meant to be thrown for a strike. A changeup and a four-seamer are really theoretically the only pitches that are meant to be thrown for a strike.
But could it be, is there greater arm torque in any of these pitches that may be causing this damage?
Yes, but if you look at the percentages, like they'll throw up the percentages of pitches that guys throw. And very few guys are in that 70% fastball range. And there's a big reason for that. They don't have command of their fastball. They can't throw it where they want to on a regular basis. Take Sergio Santos, for instance. When he matches up against a club that doesn't have a whole lot of patience, he's going to do very well. He doesn't throw his slider for strike. When he does, it's an accident.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the dirt most of the time.
Yeah,
exactly. I would just go up there and look for slider and spit on everything else. You know what? I dare you to throw me three fastballs. I'm betting the farm you can't do it before you walk me, because I'm not going to swing at a slider in the dirt because I'm sitting on it.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the fastball command. Guys that back in the old days, guys used to throw 70% fastball, especially the starters, big time starters. These guys could take a four seamer at, you know, whatever hard was back then, the Bob Gibsons, the Fellers, and go boom, 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 all four quadrants of the zone. Guy can't hit high and tight. Here's some high and tight. Guy can't hit down and away. Right there at the knees. And they did it. And they did it over and over and over again. And the only reason why they ever even went to the hook or the changeup is because all of a sudden somebody started to get on that fastball. That's why David Price pitches the way he does. He stays down and away with that fastball. Every once in a while, he'll throw a little two-seam on it. And then maybe once in a while, pop you in, a slider here and there.
But he knows where it's going.
He knows where it's going, yeah. But that's the problem. See, if you got a guy, if you want a guy to throw a two-seamer properly, you want to be a sinker ball pitcher, you need to be out here low three quarters. If you're a high three quarter guy, you better learn how to spot the four seamer, because they get behind in counts, and that's why they have to trick people all the time with all this nonsense. They're throwing way too much garbage.
Zon 201.
Yeah.
Here on Primetime Sports. Thanks, pal.
My pleasure.
You look beautiful, by the way.
Thank you.
Go have a shower, will you?
I am. I stink. Especially the hands.
Greg Zon. When we come back, Eugene Melnyk, owner, Ottawa Senators. Don't go away. It's always interesting. It's prime time on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, Join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Team before the hour, McCown and Brunt on the radio program. Next hour, Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and Jimmy Houston from Hockey Night in Canada will join us. Almost a year ago at this time, exactly, the Ottawa Senators were concluding a surprisingly good season, even by our next guest's estimates, I think. I think he was more optimistic than a lot of people would have been, but I think even he was pleased with what the Senators were able to produce. They go out, beat the Canadiens in the first round of the playoffs, wind up losing to Pittsburgh, which is no embarrassment whatsoever. And optimism reigned supreme for a young and, it appeared, developing and maturing Ottawa Senators team. And then this year, and whack, up against the wall. Here's the owner of the Ottawa Senators, Eugene Melnyk. Mr. Melnyk, how are you?
Good, Bob. How are you doing tonight?
Good. So I think I accurately depicted where you were a year ago from now. In your evaluation now, you've had a couple days to think about it. Is there one or two things that happened this year that derailed this train that looked like it was on a pretty good track?
I think it's more than one or two. I think you got to look at it like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 things, you know, went wrong. And you know, I'd take up an hour of your time, you'd get bored of me very quickly if I started giving you all our problems. But the bottom line was that a lot of things just didn't click, and we had a lot of bad breaks. We had a lot of bad games. We lost games that we should have won, and on the other hand, we won games that we should have lost. But you know, all in all, it's just it's almost like the perfect storm for us. The one thing that we, I guess, you could point to is that it's still a young team, and these guys are young guys, and they're out there playing against these, especially when you start getting out to the Western Conference, against these giants that are fast and strong, and we just weren't the better team this year. Plus, a lot of things just went wrong with, playing the system properly and leadership here. And I mean, you can go on and on and on and keep dissecting. At the end of the day, you sit there, throw in a towel and say, you know what, let's just wipe the board clean and we start, next season. I think you're going to have a very hungry group. You're going to have a very motivated group because this is not the team that we have. We're a much better team than what we showed on the ice this year.
So how come you didn't go out and hire an ex-player to be president? Everybody else is doing that.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure there's got to be a couple left, aren't there?
There might be after this season. But no. We're happy with everybody without exception. The good news is that there's no finger pointing. There's no people saying, well, I this guy didn't do this. Everybody takes responsibility from top to bottom. And I think from coach to GM right down to, the players and, all the guys in the training that everybody does. Everybody says, you know what, we just blew this thing up and it's not going to – the one good thing is they're pissed. I hate to use that word on.
Well, it's okay. I use it all the time. It's all right.
Good, good. But they go now. They're going to have an attitude. They're going to have a really bad attitude next year, and they're not going to let this happen again. They do not. This is not a fun time for them.
Eugene, is it possible that two things masked what became apparent this year? And the two things were number one, short season. Number two, great goaltending, because you did have a short season, and you did get great goaltending last year. And I think most people would concede or acknowledge your goaltending wasn't as good this year.
Yeah, but
you think it's more than that, though?
Yeah, got to go further than that, Bob. That's
all right.
Not fair, because you've got to go to look at the shots that we had on us. I think I keep missing all these. There's so many stats that people fly at you, but wasn't the Leafs that had just
they were the worst
a fraction? They were the worst. We were second worst. And when you get 50 shots, come on, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to get 30.
Right.
I remember the days when we had Volchenkov. You know, this guy would lay his body in front of a puck that was going 130 miles an hour. He didn't care. And, you know, I don't know if those days are gone or those players still exist, but you can't, you know, the system was not played to. They should never, you know, we weren't getting the puck out of our end when we should have. And there's all sorts of hockey reasons that I hear, and I think they're correct, but you shouldn't be getting 40, 50 shots against you every game. And you know, what do you expect? They can only do so much. So I don't blame the goaltending. You know, sometimes, yeah, they let in some cheap goals or stupid goals, but there's no chance. Everybody, you can blame go all the way around.
Fair
giveaways,
enough.
Everything, even goal scoring, you know. So that's what it is.
What's Jason Spezza's future with your team? He's coming up on the last year of his deal, and obviously that's going to be an area of speculation.
Well, it is already. It will be. It is already.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's hilarious, you know, anybody talks about that. But look, that's, you know, I pay big bucks to a lot of smart people in hockey with, like Brian, with 40 years of experience in this league. You know, I can't give you a comment. Let him answer that question when he's got an answer for it or decides or and has discussions with everyone and, you know, see where that all, you know, where that all pans out. You know, when it comes to player selections and things like that, I mean, I'm a great spectator and I like to know things, but I let them make the decisions because at the end of the day, hey, it's their neck. They're the ones that are accountable. And if I start, you know, putting my 5 cents in and start telling them what to do, then they say, hey, you're the guy that told me to keep this guy or get rid of this guy or whatever. And I'm not going to allow that to happen.
Well, I'll ask you another hockey question then, because then you can say the same thing. But how do you feel about what you got out of Bobby Ryan this year?
Oh, Bobby was great. I think he's an exciting player, and I think we hope that he's with us for a long time. And you know, we gave up a lot. We gave up a first-round pick and, you know, a great prospect and a player. But you know, I think he brings a lot. He's got a great work ethic. He's just a solid individual and a solid human being and comes to work every day. And I think he tries every game and he's shown a lot of leadership that way, and the guy is just very, very skilled. That's my opinion. And I think anybody that watches him play, you know, as much as I do and, you know, would agree with me.
Less than a minute, Eugene, but would you expect that this will be a lineup that will be tinkered with but not overhauled? Or the latter?
No, it will not be overhauled. There's no point in overhauling. We've got a great, great group. Are you kidding me? People wish they had our team. And, do we need to add a couple of things here or there? Do we need a power forward? Do we need a defensive defenseman? Yes, but that's tinkering.
Do you need experience, Eugene? Do you think you need a little bit more veteran experience?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think because in the back you've got only, you know, really you got Chris Phillips that is a big veteran. You got a couple of other veterans up front. But, I think we need somebody like that because we've got a very, very young team that can only get better, can only grow. And they're hungry to learn, and they want to learn. So, yeah, you got it dead on. You should be a GM or something. I heard some people are looking for GMs.
No, they're looking for presidents. Listen, if we don't run into each other, which we probably will, have a great summer, and all the best. There's Eugene Melnyk, the owner of the Ottawa Senators. Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Jim Houston of Hockey Night in Canada coming up. This is Prime Time.